Boom, 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 ba-doom. It's the Bitcoin Bottom Line with CJ Wilson and
Lamar Wilson.
Yeah, we got two Wilsons here for this week's episode. We are in Austin right now together because we're working on a policy book for Bitcoin. Basically, I guess, talking about where we're at, right, what's going on, and what we think can happen and change on Capitol Hill to make Bitcoin a better deal for everybody, I guess, basically.
Right.
So, you know, since this is an interview, informal, I guess, in a lot of ways, and since we already know each other, why don't you tell everybody what your background is, Lamar, and how you got into Bitcoin? You've been in Bitcoin way longer than me, so, right, you know, I'm prefacing that.
Well, yeah, my name is Lamar Wilson. I am the founder of Black Bitcoin Billionaires, which is a very large club on Clubhouse.
The biggest club on Clubhouse.
The biggest Bitcoin-based club outside of Bitcoin. Yeah, 135,000 people. And we built that over a year so far, so it's still rolling. It's really good. Me and my man, Bitcoin Zay, we built that club. But my background comes from the fact that I was a developer, and I got into Bitcoin, saw the white paper, got into Bitcoin, saw the freedom, said I had to build something. Mm-hmm. That's the whole point. Right. So I built a wallet called the People Wallet, which at the time was one of the only wallet. Matter of fact, it was the only wallet for a while in the world you could put on the iOS device. So that's where I come from. I love Bitcoin for the fact it ain't about the price at all with me. It's all about the freedom and the sovereignty.
Well, that's one of the things that we talked about. I remember we were in this Clubhouse rant room, like super deep. It's 2 a.m. or something like that. And one of the things you were talking about was the idea of a community. Right? Mm-hmm. Building your own community, selecting the community, making sure you have a doctor, you've got all these different roles for teachers and all these other people that are working with the food and everything else. So I guess, like, the question is, you know, as a grown up, you know, what is it about Bitcoin that drives you to keep learning and producing more stuff? But also, like, how has Bitcoin changed your life in that regard?
I would say that I'm a freedom maximalist.
Okay.
First. And so Bitcoin is the freest money that we can have. And what I mean by that is the fact that it's money that no one can censor. No one can tell you what to do with it. You can hold it on your own without even having to interact with anyone else. You can send it, right? You can do all types of things with Bitcoin that you can't do with the current financial system. Because if you're trying to send money to like Pakistan, Iran, even if the person on the other end is just like a shoemaker.
Right.
You'll get on some
censored.
Yeah, you get on straight some list. Yeah, you'll get on some list.
Straight to jail.
Yeah, you'll be on some list somewhere. Yeah. Some IMFAC list or something like that. And then next thing, OFAC list.
Yeah.
And then be like, you know, screwed.
Right.
So it's like when you look at Bitcoin, I can send money to whoever I want to. You can't tell me who to. And it's my money. It's like J.G. Rimmer. It's my money and I want it now, but it's my money and I want to send it when I want to.
But we were talking last night a little bit, and you were saying that you feel like the evolution of the Bitcoin space has really changed in the last like 5 or 6 years. So let's talk about that a little bit, because I think right now so many people are concerned with, you know, the memification of everything, right? You have to hodl it, and then we need to post memes about hodling and like, oh, it's so volatile and everything like that.
Right.
But like, you had a really interesting take, and you said that one of your favorite things was getting other people into Bitcoin by paying them in Bitcoin, right? Yeah. So tell me about that and what that experience was like.
Yeah, so like back in the day, it was far more altruistic, right? People would give Bitcoin to other people to get them to understand it. It's like, hey, get a wallet. All right, here's some Bitcoin, right? I even have videos of me still on YouTube where I gave out a whole Bitcoin.
Oh my God.
Right? I split it up and gave out a Bitcoin to somebody.
Okay.
So that's what, you know, well, what
like
I'm
one Bitcoin to multiple people.
Yeah. Okay. But it was like, got 0.2. Next person got 0.3.
Yeah.
Right. 0.5. And it's like, okay, the last person got 0.5 as well. Something like that. Right.
Yeah.
I can't even remember exactly how it was, but it's on YouTube somewhere. And so we were giving away that kind of money, right? Because it was really about trying to get people in it.
And you have to show them the tangibility of it. Like, let's do a transaction right now. And then you can see it. And that gives you the reality check.
Right.
And that's, I think the difference now is like, you actually have so many wallets, so many Lightning protocols, so many iOS things or Android things or whatever, that I think it's a little bit, it's actually more intimidating now because there's
you don't know which one.
And the stakes are higher because Bitcoin is $55,000, $60,000 or whatever.
Right.
So if you mess it up, the anxiety level is so high.
But I think that's what's so crazy. It's like the difference between like, the first people that I met in Bitcoin were libertarian, anarchy, right? Anarchist. Like there was these different types of qualities. I remember going to a bookstore here in Austin called Brave New Books, and it just opened my mind up because the dude I took, one of my friends, when he came out, he was like, "You hang with those people?" And I was like, "Yeah, they like those are my people." Even though, you know what I'm saying, that was my first time going there too. Right. But it was like a different scene now. And I saw this happen. I went to the Texas Bitcoin Conference, and it was that libertarian view. Mm-hmm. About a month or so later, in the same year, I went to a Coin Summit, which was a financial conference.
Okay.
And so the people who were at the Texas Bitcoin Conference, the guys with the flip-flops and the AKs and the, right, they were different.
I mean, because in Texas, you can do that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's
fully
abiding. Yeah, they got the gun. But then we went to Coin Summit. It was gray, blue, brown suits.
Right, okay.
Right? And we couldn't even get in because it was like $1,300, $1,800 a person.
So I've never been to Consensus, but is that the vibe at Consensus too? Or Consensus is kind of in between?
Consensus was more, because I used to do a lot of Consensus stuff. Mm-hmm. But Consensus was more around blockchain, using blockchain technology. Mm-hmm. It was kind of in between. You definitely had your zealots.
And then you had the VC bros.
And you had the VC bros. Right. Then you had the corporate guys. Like it was more like Consensus was more of a, kind of like a business conference type of thing, but not necessarily just financial.
Right.
Coin Summit felt like pure financial. Everybody in here trying to figure out how they can make money fiat off of this. And that's the part that I think that switched, because once you got the financial guys in, now you have this new group that I call the new Bitcoin maximalist.
But you have a better term for that though.
No, it's only certain ones.
I know, but the term that you busted out on Twitter the other day.
Right.
So take me through that.
So
it's a yellow belt maxis.
Yeah, yellow belt maxis, right?
Not a white belt, which is you just started. But yellow
you've been
belt.
In for a little bit. You know a little bit.
Yeah.
But I call them yellow belt maxis because it seems like if you ever seen a little kid go to the dojo and then they get their yellow belt, they might have to break up two boards or something.
Okay.
They come out feeling like,
Yeah.
Then they out in the parking lot trying to roundhouse kick people.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Even though they don't have the skill set.
Right.
And some older guys are like, hey, sit down.
Yeah.
Right? I think the same thing happens in Bitcoin from the standpoint of you got these people who are very zealous about it and have a whole lot of zeal for it, but they don't have enough to actually, if they get in a situation where they're arguing with somebody from Ethereum and they feel like they can do it, they wind up getting into ad hominem attacks because they don't have enough information to actually combat this person.
Well,
they just have the memes. They just have HODL and... Right, they have all of these.
Well, because what they're doing is they're basically taking what they're hearing,
yep,
but not what they know. They don't necessarily, they haven't mastered something yet because they're a yellow belt, right? So that they might have been in it for 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, something like that, but they haven't been through a bear market.
They also might do a roundhouse. They don't understand how to land it.
Yeah, they know what a roundhouse is.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
And that's the same. That's why I gave them the name.
Just dangerous enough to get hurt.
That's exactly it, to start a fight and get kicked.
I love
it. Yeah, exactly. But it's not, and they looked at it at first as being like, you trying to down us and separate our movement. And I'm like, no. I said, it's almost like Shaq, you know, when he always says stuff about the young players. It's like, I'm not saying this to be mean. It's just, this is where you are right now. And if you can't recognize that you're in that place where you can't have a whole conversation, it's going to wind up hurting the cause because they're setting out to try to get more people once you. But if you can't have a good conversation with an individual, and y'all, and especially in something like Spaces or Clubhouse where you can quickly get called out.
Yeah.
It's like, you're going to be up there just yelling at people.
Right.
And not yelling at people in the way that I love my man Bitcoin Tina to do it. Like, he yells at people, he knows what he's talking about.
You're wrong. You're absolutely wrong. I don't know what you're thinking about that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. He yells at people, but he knows what he's talking about.
Yes.
These people.
But he's also got a lot of experience as a traditional
investor. That's what I'm saying. He has depth. Like, a lot of these people are froth. You know how the coffee you was talking about? Like, they're the top part. They're not even the good root of whatever it is. And it's like,
I'm telling them,
like, look, get on your grind before you try to, and especially don't come at me because I'm going to eat you alive. Mm-hmm. That's pretty, like, I have my belts. I can go either way, financial or right. And so that's my whole thing. I'm like, I'm going to show you if you listen. I'm trying to teach you. But if you're just going to try to attack me, I'm just going to demolish you.
Then we end it.
Like you said, just enough to get hurt. But it's, you know what I'm saying? I think that's the thing. And I have fun with it. Like on Clubhouse, I'm not that at all. Like I just educate. On Twitter, I think it sets up for having that kind of fun, right?
Yeah. I think one of the ways that I look at it is everybody gets excited about Bitcoin, right? So you first start learning about Bitcoin and you're like, oh my gosh, this magical internet money. And there's these stages, these depths that you go through, just like martial arts, right? So you eventually get to the point where you understand the framework, right? So you might even understand parts of the white paper, you might understand signatures, you might understand, you know, divisibility, keys, fees, things like that. And then you get to a point where things start to get difficult, right? And you start introducing like entropy, right? You start introducing inflation. You start introducing maybe the more macroeconomic
the full scale
of not just how Bitcoin, but how it fits into the world, right? And then that's really sort of where you have to cut your teeth, because then it becomes logical, right? Because it's not about you at that point, it's about the entire world. And I think the thing that I see a lot, and I've had conversations very recently with people, like, and I always try to take it to the DMs immediately. When I see two people like like mean girling each other, I DM both of them separately. I'm like, you're both child actors. Like, what are you doing? You know, let's just chill out. And then like, and they'll be like, hey, but they're being mean. And I'm like, the real world is difficult.
Right.
Like Bitcoin is just like the real world. It's about subjective or objective truth. And I think that's where, you know, having that mastery of the subject, it's not 100 hours. It's not 200 hours. It's thousands of hours.
Yeah, good they would be, CJ, if they were zealous, like had that zeal and zealous about it, but at the same time had the information. That would be powerful.
Right.
And that's what I tried to explain.
But that only comes with time, though.
Yeah, but the problem is that if you are not humble and understand it,
right?
If you don't have any humility about it and say, you know what, I need to figure this out.
But what's the phrase, though? Stay humble, stack sats.
Right, but they say that mean.
Right, but they don't know what it means.
Yes. You have to, because you have to realize, like, Bitcoin humbles me every day.
Yeah.
Like, Lightning Network, I'm not there yet, right? I'm way better than I was in January, because I really wasn't putting the time into it to figure out how the protocol works, because I like to get dig deep. I had to teach myself all the stuff I knew,
right?
Because there were no Jimmy Song books, because I met Jimmy Song before he was Jimmy Song.
Okay.
Like, I met Jimmy Song at a hackathon. You know,
before
what I mean?
The hat.
Yeah, exactly. Before,
So here's the thing, right? So Jimmy is very famous for the hat, right? The hat is his thing now. But he said, this is what he said the other day. He said the hat actually has an origin. And it was, I believe he said it was like late 2017 when Bitcoin hit 10,000 for the first time.
It probably was.
That was the hat. And then the hat became a thing. And, you know, I think that's funny, right? Because there's different, like, there's a halving schedule, right? He's got a hatting schedule. He's got a hatting schedule.
And here's the thing. If it hits 100K, like, Jimmy hasn't put on laser eyes. I haven't either. But Jimmy always said, if it hits 100K, then I'll go laser eyes.
Oh, he'll go laser eyes. He'll activate laser eyes
at 100K.
Okay. Yeah,
that's what he said. So I mean, I like that idea. But that's what that, I guess, that's what I'm trying to bring into the fold of the people on Twitter. Because I never was really on Twitter.
Right.
And I realized, like, Twitter's a different, my wife was trying, she's on Twitter. She recognizes that there's a different type of, like, element in the way you engage with each other.
Mm-hmm.
I look at Twitter as like going to the park to hoop. It's like, you're going to have competition. People going to talk some mouth. Like,
well, yeah, because Twitter really allows for this massive spread of people to access the same type of information, right?
Right.
Basically, like, you thrust something out there, you splats on the ground or splats on the table,
right,
and everybody can poke it with a stick at that point, you know?
Right.
And I think that the interesting thing about that is there's no, like, special access Twitter, but what we do get sometimes is there's, like, we get kind of, like, siloed into receiving other people's tweets first, which I still think is weird. I like it when Twitter was just a timeline,
wide open,
because then you can kind of just doom scroll, like, and see what happened 3 hours ago and then sort of catch up, you know? But now it's sort of like you're getting this asymmetry. Like, you might get 4 tweets from the same person and you're like, wait, this is 12 hours ago, but it's like too soon. But I think really for you, like, you've done a huge deal of outreach through Clubhouse, right? And I don't really use Clubhouse as much anymore because it's a straight audio thing. And, like, I'm around my kids or I'm at work, so I can't really do it.
Especially, like, with some of the stuff that's being said.
Yeah, because it gets out of hand. And especially, like, some of the late night PM Clubhouse stuff gets a little way too weird and I got to just turn off. But tell me about reaching out to the Black community with Bitcoin, because I think that's something that we've been talking about and that we're working through with this book, right? We're talking about this in a way of saying, hey, listen, this is actually an equal opportunity situation. So tell me about that and your phrase on that.
Early on in Bitcoin, of course, I would go to conferences and there would be like 3 Black people at the entire conference, right? It's like me, maybe Zay, right? It's the same people, right?
Right.
And so what I realized is that the only reason why they weren't there, it was not because it was intentional that they It just wasn't. It wasn't intentional on the other way. The other way. It wasn't intentional.
There was not an outreach to the black community.
There you go. Nobody was telling the black community, "Hey, here's this amazing thing." But from the beginning, before I even went to a first conference, like I have a video from like 2013 of me like on Georgetown Street, which is like what people in my city would call the hood, right?
Okay.
Like it's just where I'm from, so it's like I'm off of that street. So it was like, it's like at first. When I did that video, it was really because I was like, I see something that provides freedom.
Mm-hmm.
I want to tell everybody, like, this is how you can get free.
Okay.
So I would share it. But then I started going to conferences and realized there was not anyone doing that intentionally. So I started trying to figure out ways to reach more and more people. Mm-hmm. And at first it was just friends and family. Like, and I even did like a class at a community college. And that it was just a free class on a Saturday. And one of the dudes from there wound up becoming like the 28th employee at Coinbase because he had just learned about Bitcoin at that class.
And he went all in.
Oh, yeah. And he's, of course, he's paid now.
Right.
He hits me up and says, thank you all the time. And he's like,
congratulations.
Yeah. Shout out to you, Luke. What's happening, man? but yeah, so he wound up getting on the Coinbase because of that learning and education. Mm-hmm. But I keep doing that, right? I keep laying those things down. And what happened? I had a group on Facebook that had like 26,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the guys from that group was like, Lamar, you should get on Clubhouse. He was like, it just feels like how it used to feel.
Yeah, and then Clubhouse was really new at the time and really just exploded, right? Yeah. From like right around the beginning of the year, from there until about April, it was almost like Clubhouse was the only thing to do.
And it's coming back again because you're getting cold.
Right.
Like what's happening is people are going to be inside.
Well, and people are going to get locked down again.
It's cuddle season. It's cuddle season. So people are inside. They're trying to figure out how not to be bored.
Tell me about the struggle though. Like when you're communicating something that you're very fluent with, right? I think one of the hardest things about Bitcoin is once you get to a certain depth, right? It's hard to remember what it was like to be a beginner. Right. And so communicating the important principles is always going to be easy.
Right.
But then sometimes you're stymied by these beginner questions. So how do you keep the beginner questions like from
analogies about it's like I always say Jesus used parables to get across very high thinking type of concepts.
Right.
I use analogies all the time, man. So I try to figure out, especially analogies within somebody's wheelhouse. Like I'll listen to them speak.
You try to figure out what their niche is and then how to craft it.
Yeah, and I craft it directly for them.
So you're like the sushi chef that it's like, tell me what you don't like and I'll make you everything else.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
and I think that's the way I've been able to do it. And people like the analogies because then they go, oh, that makes sense.
Right.
Right. Outside of that, though, I've also been able to train people technically. So like when I hired my first staff, nobody knew about blockchain. They were developers, but they didn't understand how blockchains worked. They didn't understand any of that. Mm-hmm. So I went in and trained up. They're a monster squad now. Mm-hmm. But at the time, nobody knew. So I can go in depth and train. Matter of fact, I used to be Jimmy's TA for programming blockchain, right? So I can go in depth, but I realized like the people that I'm trying to reach, a lot of times they came into the game because of the Shiba Inu or one of these crazy coins. Somebody told them about it and they jumped in and got something and they have no clue what the space is. They just know it's like something they can put money on and try to make some money.
Right. And I think that's the difference where like the very first initial wave of Bitcoiners was the cryptographic like coders that were very interested in privacy and freedom and that type of stuff. And then there became this sort of Bitcoin as a use case, right? Where people started spending Bitcoin because then they can mine it and spend it and then basically get stuff for free in their head.
And distribute it. That's the
correct
part.
Yeah.
Get it to more people.
Yeah. And then I think after 2017, when Bitcoin hit, 18,000, 19,000 for the first time, it blew up on the scene and people were like, whoa, and then it attracted all these people just because of the number going up.
Right.
And then since then, there's been a couple mini cycles in between, 2017 and today.
Yeah.
But basically, once it hit 10,000 or 20,000 for the first time, that's what like got everybody to just snap their neck and suddenly look. And then as a result of that, other people are coming out with other coins to, basically try to capitalize on the ready, fire, aim.
Just to get more thing. Bitcoin, which is the funniest thing.
Yes.
You tell me in one breath that this thing is better than Bitcoin, but in the next breath, you want Bitcoin. It doesn't make sense. I'm going to sell you this thing. Imagine that.
This is better. You give me your Bitcoin.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you this
something that's
this
better.
Other thing. And then like, well, why are you selling this thing
if
to
it's
me
better
if
than,
it's better than the thing that you're taking from me? It's like, It's like,
it never makes sense.
These aren't the droids you're looking for. Right? That's a very much what it seems like sometimes. And I guess, and to me, like, I guess that's really where I make the case for maximalism a lot. And, like, in a way of saying, like, logically, yeah. Right? Bitcoin's the strongest. Then just play that hand.
Right.
Keep playing your aces.
You know, my analogy, I say, especially dudes, I always tell them, like, look, I was like, yeah, there's all of these sad chicks out here in the world, right? There's all these women you can go chase sure. and look beautiful and for a moment. But I said, that's for an instant. I said, because every man, once they got their ride or die, once they have their wife, they know that's their base. And they wouldn't mess that up for anything because all of this other stuff is just, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's
like, when you know you got her,
yeah.
then why are you even, you wouldn't even look nowhere else. It don't matter how beautiful they are. It doesn't matter. They not, you already know that they're not going to give you what you need.
Right.
And so that's what I always tell people. I'm like, that's what Bitcoin is. Like, when you finally understand that technically it's better, from a network perspective it's better, from a monetary policy is better. Mm-hmm. Like, if you just start going down the list, it's like there's nothing that's better than, you can get into transaction time and speed, but does that really matter?
Right. And right? that's the thing, like, where Bitcoin is transacting trillions of dollars.
Right.
Real money.
Right.
Like, real value, huge trillions of dollars worth of value is going back and forth on Bitcoin as a result of the fact that the monetary policy is stable, right? And the protocol is stable.
Right.
Because of those two things and how solid they are, that allows things to be built on top of that. And the right. goal for this whole exercise, you know, I'm assuming, is to eventually get to a layer 3 or a layer 4 or layer 5 or whatever over the course of the next couple of decades, right?
Now,
you know, one of the coolest things about being able to come together and write this book is now we actually have something that we can hand to people and say, hey, this is how you as a regulator, this is how you as a legislator, this is how you as a business owner or whatever, this is how Bitcoin affects the world and how that can affect you.
Right.
And so you want to be on one side or the other. Like, I think it's very interesting that in the last, let's say, 6 months, there's been a lot of action with Bitcoin. Taproot's activated. China's banned all the miners. We've seen El Salvador, right?
Yeah.
Twitter tipping payments and stuff like that.
Dude,
like,
freaking,
if you don't think things are happening. Yeah.
Plevnet with the whole entire Lightning Network.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Lightning's got over 3,300 Bitcoin locked
just
up.
Clubhouse. Like, the Clubhouse, I don't think people understand. The Clubhouse actual influence is huge.
Yeah.
Plebnet wouldn't have been Plebnet without the ability for them to come together.
So Plebnet is a group of Lightning node operators that basically decided, hey, let's do this on our own and make our own mini network within the Lightning network.
Sub-network.
Yeah. And so they're collaborating to funnel payments, I guess lease liquidity to each other and stuff
right.
like that.
This book is coming basically out of connections on Clubhouse.
Right. I mean, literally,
yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Everybody here I met off Clubhouse.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. I think people don't understand the power of Clubhouse and everybody of like minds but different perspectives coming together and thinking about this stuff, right?
Yeah.
Like, we all have a central point, like our single issue,
right.
which is Bitcoin, but we all come from like all of these different, and that's what Clubhouse allowed. That's why, like, even Black Bitcoin Billionaires, I was talking to Gary, who's my roommate here at the Bitcoin Big Brother's house.
Gary, the Bitcoin boomer.
Yeah.
Gary Leland was one of the writers.
I was talking to him and he was very real with me. He was like, Lamar, and that's what a lot of people say. He's like, Lamar, when I saw Black Bitcoin Billionaires, I thought I couldn't come in there.
Right.
He was like, because I didn't want to mess up anything. I didn't know if I was going to get kicked out.
I joined anyways. I was I don't know. They're going to have to kick me out.
But that's what's so funny. Yeah. And that's what I always say. I said, but Gary, and I say this to everybody. I said, you thought Black was what's going to keep you out. You're not a billionaire. That's what's going to keep you out. Right? And so then everybody goes, see, because that's the thing. Yeah. We have been so conditioned to think color
right.
and that it's that's something that is supposed to divide us instead right. of just recognizing that I'm just saying we're Black Bitcoin billionaires.
But you had something there that was, I thought, really, really beautiful, which was, let's get everybody to be a Satoshi millionaire.
Right.
Right? Let's focus on that. Let's figure out how hard is it to get to be a Satoshi millionaire? And it's really not.
Mm.
Right. And then all of a sudden
it puts it in people's wheelhouse
and you're putting it in their wheelhouse. And then you're also combating the unit bias that people get from all these meme coins, which was always, I put in $100 and I get jillions of these tokens or whatever.
Right.
So now you're able to say, like, and it's been really helpful for me, honestly, because I remember, like, having a conversation with you on Clubhouse at one point, talking to American HODL at some point, and then really trying to reformat my mind into thinking in sats. Not just Bitcoin, because Bitcoin as a unit is a very difficult unit. You know, it's like a mile, right? It's difficult to say, like, how tall are you in miles? I don't even know, like, what's a mile, right?
Right.
Like, so I think once you're able to take it from sats and you're saying, like, oh, well, you know, I'm 6'1", so I'm 73 inches tall or whatever, right?
Right.
Like, that's an easier unit to get into,
right,
as opposed to miles. And so having this ability to kind of go through the Bitcoin, like, experience in that regard and reframe it for people, I think, right, is so valuable, because then it teaches people, I can be a millionaire, right? I can be a Satoshi millionaire. And then, like, that wasn't that hard. Maybe I should be a Satoshi decamillionaire,
right,
or whatever else.
And then we also say, like, the goal also is to hold on to it, because what we're trying to do is get to dollar sets a Satoshi parity, right?
Yes.
So now if you have a million Satoshis, you have $1 million. So that's how you become a millionaire the other way.
Right.
So it's just really, like you said, just establishing a small goal,
mm-hmm,
because if people know they can hit that goal, and then that's something we always say, listen, once you become a Satoshi millionaire, do not let go of that. Like, hold on to that.
Same
keep adding status to it, but just, that should be your floor at that point, right?
Yeah.
So I think that whole concept really went over really well, and Cash App got behind it.
Yep.
And helped us
and
out.
And Swan as well. Yeah. Swan's on that. So you
know, Swan didn't really get behind what we were doing, but yeah, they did the same thing.
Yeah. So you can denominate your stack and sats.
Oh, yeah.
And I think, Cash
App actually came and helped us to. We wound up giving Bitcoin to like 8,000 newbies.
And
you know what I'm saying?
And well, this is also, Jack just quit Twitter.
So you know he's about to focus on Square.
He's going to focus on Square, which is great.
So, Square, Blue Sky, like, I think it's,
yeah,
everything in that realm is about to be, that's where he's going to focus.
Yeah, and I think that's great for us. I mean, I think people that are already established Bitcoiners and the Bitcoin network in general is going to benefit from someone that turned Twitter into one of the best communication networks in the world. Now we can use Cash App and things like that, and maybe, right, Cash App becomes one of the best Bitcoin, you know.
I think it's going to be crazy. The hardware wallet and all of that, mm-hmm, I'm ready to see it. But outside of that, man, I think this year was a different year, because what we started to see was more community happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
well, you get enough people, yeah, right? And then people start to sort of break away a little bit and say, like, hey, let's have a quiet conversation. You know, five of us, let's have this conversation. And then other people are doing that.
Look at this collaboration.
But then it works. Yeah. Then it comes together where you're able to. I think Bitcoin's so cool because it takes a diverse cast of people, and it homogenizes them through a view of, like, hey, we see Bitcoin as a very positive thing. So let's make that the central connecting point.
Right.
And the metaphor that I like to use for teams and things like that is like a wheels, right? Like a spoke that fits in a wheel, and then many spokes, and then the hub. So if like
the hub is Bitcoin.
Hub is Bitcoin, and then each spoke is a different skill set or a different dialect or a different dynamic or whatever. So you might have like Lightning Network, trading, you know, you might have like loans,
banking or whatever,
any sort of banking stuff, hardware wallets, you know, software wallets, whatever.
So education,
So you have all these different people that you need to build your ultimate cast of characters.
Right.
In the same way that when you're building your community, like you were talking about, you need your farmers, you need the guy to manage the cows, you need the guy to manage the crops, you need the guy to manage the construction,
right?
You need the water person, you know what I mean, or gal. You need the juice specialist, yeah, and the spice guy, yeah, and you know, you need the hardware
the
guy. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that's really cool, because it really, you know, there's very few things that bring people together these days. I mean, realistically.
That's what I was about to say. It's like the collaboration for me is huge. Because the world would tell you that nobody can really, you can't really get together.
Well,
like you got left, right.
Pressure comes from the top, right? And you have this apparatus of, let's say, government or big business or whatever, and it puts pressure down on individual people. We're all standing around relatively at the same height, like we're all adults or whatever. Mm-hmm. And as this big, like, smushy device comes in and gets us, it effectively, like, forces everybody to dodge out of the way, right? And gets us further apart. And that's
I think it's different than that. I really think it's like,
but I'm saying that's what's been happening.
I think have you ever went to like crocodile, like rat, where they wrestle crocodiles?
Oh, like one of those Florida crocodile farms.
And then they get like the chicken and they throw it in. I truthfully believe that's what it is. Because here's what's so funny. The crocodile don't realize they got a whole freezer full of chicken, but he's only throwing one in at a time. So they go fight over this one chicken,
right?
If they really
implied scarcity.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, yeah.
We live in such a huge state of abundance that if we finally realize, as the crocodile, so to speak, that they're just basically We would all turn and get out of the freaking pool and go get all the.
Because it's just a janky little chain link fence holding us back.
There you go. If all of us went at the same time, we knock the fence down, get the chicken, and then.
Or just go where
we turn, and then turn the guy throwing the chicken in into Carol Baskin's husband. You know what I'm saying?
Like, Carol Baskin's husband.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's
where'd he go?
Yeah, where'd he go? Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I think, truthfully.
Season two of Tiger King coming
to you. If we stop trying to like fight all the time over differences,
right,
and then come together on the things that we agree on.
But realistically,
you can have this collaboration.
Right? Yeah, realistically, we do need something because we do have a diverse cast of characters. We have different languages, different places, different ideas, different. We were all raised differently, right? Yeah. So it's like, you know, having Bitcoin as a central focal point allows everybody to sort of look at the same thing. And we might be able to do like a little mosh pit swirl around it and right. see what is different on one side of it versus the other, meaning, you know, like self-custody might be different than a hot wallet. So like, let's learn both of those things. Right. But you spend enough time in the circle around it, right? Yep. And then you do realize that we're all very similar. And
but you see what you keep doing?
Yeah.
Whenever you do this, it starts mixing the Kool-Aid with the sugar and you have a delicious drink.
There you go.
Like that's really what it is, right? Yeah. You got the water, the Kool-Aid, the sugar.
But we're willing
and
to
you
mix.
Keep mixing it,
yeah,
you
know? We're willing to mix, I think, as a Bitcoin community, much more so than anybody would have predicted through these algorithms and stuff like that basically just say, oh, you like this video, we're just going to throw you in with these people that like all those videos. Because
right.
we're having real personal interactions, right. not just digitized falseness. And so that's allowing us to sort of rise up and come up with big ideas.
I think like, the meme term is based, right?
Based.
So I think we're based. A lot of Bitcoiners are based because the
actual. It's like this. It's like someone goes, boop, and you go,
the actual.
I am now based.
The actual foundation for which we are based is all built on something that none of us can manipulate.
Correct.
So we have a very solid foundation.
To take one step off of and realize that this is the arc stone that for all of us.
There you go. Yeah. There you go. Exactly. And I think that's what it is. Like the shakier the foundation, of course, the more loose all of that becomes.
Yeah.
But if you have a solid foundation that you know is not going to change now, it's just like with the protocol itself. You can build things on top and know that that's not going to fall
apart. It's not
going to
wobble under.
Yeah.
And I was talking to one of my friends recently, and I sort of accused something of being built on sand.
Yeah.
You know, I said, listen, that's built on sand. Just so you know, like, just don't put too much like mental effort or financial effort into this process because it's shaky, right? So the best thing to say is that once you have that central core as strong as possible, it's like your spine, right? You need to have this hard thing that you can say, this is not going to change.
Right.
And let's put something else that's not going to change on top of that. And you might have a little bit of wobble in between, a little bit of heat loss or friction or whatever.
Right.
But as long as you have these things lined up, these spines stacking up, then all of a sudden, then you can add muscles and all these other things to the body. And
you
then the body works.
You gotta be based.
But without a spine, without the base and the ethics and without the, you know, the truth, I guess, in that regard, it's very hard to go a predictable direction. And then you just kind of like what I was saying earlier was the pressure comes down from like the government or from the big corporations or whatever. And then people basically, they once they start to feel pressure on top of them, they split out. Yeah, exactly. And they just go, wee. And then they're suddenly really far apart and that thing closes and maybe creates this sort of like Enter the Dragon Hall of Mirrors where you don't really know where anything is, but you see somebody with a claw, right? And you're just like, where's this guy? So I think like Bitcoin bashes out all those mirrors and bashes out the illusions of that are coming down around us and gives us a much more just a really good base to operate from because then we can say that's like in Inception, the movie Inception, you have a totem. You say, okay, I know it's reality versus a dream because I know how much this thing weighs and no one's corrupted it. And I think Bitcoin in that sense, it does a lot of those things. But it's really cool. And I'm really excited to see how this book's going to turn out and how people are going to receive it. So,
oh, for sure, man. I can't wait. Like, this is a great learning experience. And
this is the first time for us writing a book.
Yeah, exactly.
Individually. Yeah.
People keep asking me to write one. And now seeing the process, it makes me want to write another one. I'm not lying to you. Like, I'm like,
dude, we're not even through like chapter 8 yet. Like, let's,
I know, but I was like,
slow down.
Yeah. But it still was cool. It's just, and I truthfully think the way Jimmy put it together, like getting so many diverse people from so many diverse like thoughts.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be.
Yeah, we're regionally diverse. We're ethnically diverse. We're experientially diverse.
There's so many.
We have a guy that likes the Red Sox. I mean, you know, like it's and one guy like, got a guy that likes softball. I mean, it's just it's very.
No,
very
we even weird. Have age.
I know. Yeah, it's Gary's the Bitcoin boomer. We got a boomer. It's so you know, crazy, man. Yeah. But yeah, so well, Lamar, thanks, man. Thanks for being on.
Anytime, cousin. Anytime. Yeah, I realize this is my cousin. I called him my cousin from the beginning, so he's my cousin.
All right.
Yeah, well, man. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us on this ad hoc episode of the Bitcoin Bottom Line. I'm CJ Wilson, and this is Lamar Wilson, and we are coming to you soon in digital form and physical form with a we're gonna have a book. It's gonna be really cool about Bitcoin and policy and stuff like that. But we'll see you on the internet.
See you later.